Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Lake Forest Church podcast. Lake Forest is in Huntersville, North Carolina. We try to be a place that's safe for people who've given up on church but not on God. Hope you enjoy this message. If you want to find out more about us, you can check us out at www.lakeforest.org. Thanks.
Labor Day, if you have a motorcycle, a Jeep, a boat, or a grill, you should be using them today. If not, they will be taken from you and given to someone that will actually use them. We are in a series called Make the Call. This is the third week of the series. It's a series. Today's topic is family choices. And let the record be known that Mike Moses decided to leave Lake Forest during this Sunday, go to the cabins and do some family time, asked me to do the message. And I'm honored to do the message. Before I start, though, I do have to say it. I'm a little nervous. Why am I nervous? Well, primarily, family is a tough topic to talk about. Last week, I went to the post office. I had a box I needed to mail to New York City. I had some stuff in it for a friend of mine. So did the routine, put it in a box, taped it shut, put the address on it, took it to the post office, put it on the counter. The lady said, "You want first class or whatever?" And I'm like, "Just get it there." And then she said, "Is it fragile?" Well, what am I supposed to say? No, just beat the heck out of it. Throw it around, run over it, whatever. No. So I said, "Yeah, it's fragile. Take care of it." And the truth of the matter is, when it comes to family choices, it's a fragile topic. It's a sensitive topic. It's a topic that relates to all of us because we all have a family, whatever that might look like for you. Some of our families are going okay, but some of them, they're just not going that great, if the truth be told. And they haven't been going that great for a while. Some of us are coming from a divorced family, like myself. My parents got divorced, so me and my brother and my sister, we had all that damage. Some of us never knew our dads. We were adopted. Some of us, yeah, there's just pain going on, and it's fragile. And I don't want to take this thing called family, which in a lot of ways is a negative word nowadays, I don't want to take this fragile thing and just shake it, because it's not my goal. My goal isn't to upset. My goal isn't to do more damage to your family. My goal is to help make good choices that would bring life and not death, that would bring prosperity and not damage. Because the choices we make will make us. And Mike taught us that 2 weeks ago. So we're on family choices today. It's a fragile topic. I'm a little bit nervous and I'm sensitive because this is my 1 year anniversary here at Lake Forest and I'd like to make it two. I said, "Mike, are you trying to get me fired? Talk about families." So, I'll give you my address so you can send all of those gifts to my house for my one-year anniversary. But let me tell you what I've seen in my 1 year that I've been here. I've seen a lot of you guys just really take some great steps to making your family stronger. I've sat in your living rooms. I've sat at your dining room tables. I've sat on your front porches till the late hours of the morning as you shared with me some stuff. That you're just not happy where your marriage is at, or you're just not happy where your family is at, and you're like, "We need some help. Greg, can you come over?" And it's not just me. You've taken steps outside. You're doing whatever it takes to make families healthy, doing what it takes to make marriages healthy. And I love that. I love that you guys want healthy families, because I want healthy families, and I know God wants healthy families. He's actually building a perfect family. And he sent his son to die on the cross and is inviting you to be one of his kids. And it won't be perfect until we all go home to be with our dad, but he's building one. And he's a dad and he knows families and he's got a son and he understands that stuff and he's written a bunch of things down in the Word of God, the Bible, to help us while we're here to have healthy families. So I love that. But I do have a couple ground rules before I go any further. One, actually just one really ground rule. Husbands, wives, kids, there is no elbowing through this service. All right? If I see some elbowing, I don't know what I'm going to do, but don't do that, okay? Husbands, none of that. Kids, listen to what he's saying. None of that stuff. There's no elbows. And I want to talk about families. And what I want to do, because I'm a student pastor, I want to help you guys come alongside your kids. Now, you're probably saying, oh, great. I go to Davidson. I'm in college. I don't have any kids. I'm not even married. Or you're an empty nester or whatever. Then take these more along the lines of how to influence people, because it's transferable. So I want to do that, but before I do those five things that I want to talk about, I need to address marriage. Family starts once you get married. Family doesn't start when you have kids. Family starts on that day where you stand in front of all your friends and God and say, I do, for better or worse, richer for poor, sickness and health, till death do us part. That's when family, your immediate family, starts. It starts there, and you got to have solid foundation to build on the rest of this stuff. And I do some pre-marriage counseling every now and then when people actually want me to marry them, and they'll come into my office, and it's so funny, they'll drive in, and I can see them from the windows, and they're coming in, and they're in their car, and they're in the front seat, and you got the guy who's driving, and his fiance is right next to him, right? She's not even over in the seat over there. She is slammed up against him and holding his hand, and he's trying to drive, and they get out of the car, and he runs around, and he opens the door, and she gets out, and they hold hands, and they're walking into my office, and I'm just, you know, isn't that cute? And they come into my office and they sit on the couch, right? And they sit on the couch right beside each other and their fingers are interlocked and they're on his lap and everything is just great and it's perfect. And then I said, so glad you're here. A little premarital counseling. I have a verse for you. And they pretend that they're excited, but they're not really listening to anything that I'm saying. But it's fun for me just to see their reactions. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 28. But if you decide to get married, you will face many troubles in this life. And they just go, oh, isn't that sweet, honey? Because they had no idea what I just said. But it's true, isn't it? And I won't make you raise your hand, but if you've had troubles in your marriage, man, that's true. And God's told us that it's going to be tough at times. I mean, it's right there. So you're like, well, why, God, why is it so tough? Why do you got to make it so tough? Well, here's the reality. I'm a sinner, and I go and I marry another sinner, right? And then we decide in my family to have four more little sinners. So now there's six sinners in one house. Well, you're going to have problems when you do that. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. And there's these myths out there about marriage that you're going to find this soulmate and there's one perfect person and your mom says, there's a fish in the sea for you. And I say, sir, there's also sharks and seaweed. All of those. I got to find the person that completes me. You hear all these Hollywood things and I'm sorry to tell you, those are just lies. That's what Hollywood and society wants us to think about marriage. But if you want to know the purpose and the goals for marriage, you got to ask the guy that invented marriage, right? And his name is God. He's the God of the Bible. And he writes it all in here. 1 Corinthians 11, Colossians 3, Ephesians 5, Titus, 1 and 2 Timothy. The list goes on about marriage and what it's supposed to be about. And can I tell you, one of the main goals of marriage is for growth in your life. If you're a follower of Christ and you decide to get married, there will be tough times, I can promise you that. But God's goal is growth for you, and the primary tool that he's going to use to grow you to be more like Jesus is your spouse. So let's put a positive spin on it. If you're married, God is using you to make someone else to be more like Jesus. Right? Don't abuse that. But it is positive. If you have kids, that's the second primary tool that God uses to be more like Jesus. He will use your spouse first, and then he will use your kids next. I never knew how selfish I was and how impatient I was until I had kids. And my spouse pointed that out to me. So don't have this Hollywood picture of what marriage is supposed to be. It's not about that. It's about growth. God is concerned about your holiness much more than he is concerned about your happiness. He wants you like Christ. He'll do whatever it takes to get you there. So please don't quit when times get tough. And if your marriage isn't going so well right now, make the call. Get some help. Another thing that I think we need to understand about marriage too is we all have our own roles. God's very clear and specific that we have unique roles when it comes to marriage and family. Kids have a role. Women have a role. Men have a role. Moms, dads, husbands, wives. We all have roles. And he's very clear in Colossians 3 and 1 Corinthians 11 especially that it goes like this. God, Christ, man, woman. And we all have roles. Kids weren't listed, but we'll put them in there for now. We all have unique roles. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but the role of the man, you run your family. You're the head of the household. You will lead your family. God has designed you to be the leader of the family. Guys, how do I get through the guys? Sports analogies. Be the pace car. Set the pace. Be the point guard. Run the team. Be the striker if you're a soccer player. And football started this week. Amen. Be the quarterback. Be the quarterback. Run the show. Call the plays. Set the pace. Get off the couch. Run your family. You cannot be a passive bench-sitting man and lead your family. Get up. Do something. That's your job. That's your job. And if you refuse that role, then somebody else has to step in and do that role. And if that's your wife, then guess what? She's not doing her role either. And now you've got a guy that won't do his role and a wife that's not doing the role that she was designed to do. And no wonder the kids are confused. Marriage is about growth. And there's roles that God has specifically designed to make a healthy marriage and a healthy family. Don't renege on those rules. Learn them, study them, know them. Wives, let your husbands lead. I know it's hard sometimes. But when they do a good job, encourage them. You're the helper. And it's not a lesser role at all. We need you. The quarterback doesn't get anything done unless there's a good team around him. We got to have that. So men, you got two jobs. Lead your family, love your wife. The basis of solid family. And it breaks my heart. I see marriages fall apart all the time. It just seems like it's the norm now. And I don't want to throw any statistics at you because I'm not here to scare anybody. It just seems like the norm. I see it all the time. I work with teenagers, have for the last 20 years, and it just seems like the norm. Please don't give up. God said it's going to be tough. Don't throw in the towel. Make the call. Find some help. I have a passion for healthy marriages. I have a passion for families. So make the call. And you can call me. You can call the church here. There's a lot of stuff that we have here at Lake Forest that can help you. There's marriage seminars this fall. There's a parenting class from October 3 to November 6 and how to do the whole parenting thing. There's men's ministries here, and guys get together and figure out and learn what that means to be the man of God in the house. There's a women's ministry that's kicking off on Tuesday night at Inside Edition. Today's the last day to register. Get out there and register and get in there and learn and understand. Students, there's retreats for you to go on this fall that we can all understand this stuff. Make the call if your family's not going so well. Do something. Don't give up. Why? The primary reason? Jesus didn't give up on me, and he didn't give up on you. The rest of the time, I want to talk about how to come alongside your kid. I'm a student pastor. That's what I do. Student and families. I've been doing it for 20 years. Absolutely love it. And again, if you don't have any kids, then yeah, how to influence people. Now, I can remember the first day when Caroline, my wife, and I found out that we were going to have our first kid. And we were in Iowa. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and we moved to Iowa in the fall, and we didn't know anybody. All of our family was here. We were just kind of out in the middle of the country, literally, with nobody, just me and Caroline. And we had been married for a year and a half. And you're in Iowa. And if you don't know anybody and you live in Iowa, there's not a lot of other things that you're going to do. So Caroline was late. went to the drugstore, got this little box, and it said pregnancy test on it, EPT or whatever. Back then, they were like $10, and she's like, well, we're rookies. We had no idea what's going on here. So she took the test, and it came back, and there was one line, and we looked at the instructions, and the instructions said, if there's one line, then you're going to have a baby. So we just stared at it for a little bit, and I was like, are these accurate? It seemed to me at that point that there needed to be a lot more technology involved than just a stick. And so I said, we got to go to the doctor. I was a rookie. So we go to the doctor. And we get to the doctor and we're like, we need to know if she's pregnant. So he said, yeah, come on back. He pulled out that same box. I'm going, no, we already did that one. We did that one, and it was one line. He said, look, that's 99.9% accurate. And we're like, and I just said, do it again. Do it again. So I did it again, one stick. And the doctor said, I'll leave you alone in his office. And so I walked over to my wife, and I held her hands, and she's got the most beautiful brown eyes. And I just looked her in the eyes, and I said the most romantic thing that I've ever said to her. We will make it through this. I don't think she hit me, but like it was some short-term disease or something. Here, take some antibiotics, and it'll all be okay. We'll make it through this. Guys, don't ever say that. And then we had the process. We're telling our families, and we had so many of our families and friends encourage us. They're like, Greg, when you hold that kid for the very first time, in the hospital, and you're just holding it, you're just going to absolutely fall in love. And I'm like, great. So the whole 9-month thing went, and it was time to deliver Gunner. His name's Gunner, our oldest, and he was born, and I was looking forward to this, love connection thing, and came out, and great, and they cleaned him up and gave him to me. This is my son, my firstborn son. And I looked at him, and I looked at Caroline, who was still in the bed. She didn't look so good, and I was staring at him, and I looked at Caroline and said the second most romantic thing probably I've ever said. I just said, he's ugly. Now, that's the second thing that you shouldn't say to your wife who just did all this work for the last however many hours. He's ugly. So I was waiting for that love connection thing, and it didn't happen. I was like, well, maybe it'll take a month. No, 2 months. No, 3. You know what? Here's the deal. With me, it's just me. I didn't connect with that kid until he was about 6 months old. I'm just being honest. There wasn't that whole, I love this, whatever. I needed for him to be 6 months old so he could distinguish the difference between me and a lamp. Then I could kind of connect. We could talk, have a little bit of interaction. And then I had 3 more after that, and they were all ugly, and I didn't connect with any of them until 6 months old or so. And then I'm like, well, where do I go to get some help on this whole parenting thing? Because I'm clueless. So I figured, well, it's got to be in the Bible. Looking through the Bible, I'm trying to find the book and the chapter and the verses that said, this is how to parent. And I was waiting for like 40 verses. Never found it. It's not in there. So then I was like, well, maybe there's like some examples of some really solid families that we can just model our family after. So I started reading. Open it up to Genesis. First family, Adam and Eve. Well, that didn't go so good. Adam and Eve had a couple of sons. I had a couple of sons. One killed the other one and got a life sentence for it. Okay, next. Flipping through some more. Get to Samuel. Guy named Eli. Oh, he's the priest. He's the pastor of the church. This guy's going to know what's going on, right? I'm going to follow this guy. Eli had 2 boys, and Eli was the pastor of the church. You know what his boys were doing? They were stealing off the top of the offering. Going around, they were taking it out of the top. Eli didn't do anything about it. God got pretty upset. Severe consequences. I think there was death involved in that one as well. So I'm like, well, that's not working. David, King David, there we go. Man after God's own heart, here we go. King David, okay, he had three boys that murdered each other. Then he had a daughter who was raped by another one of his sons. And I'm like, this isn't going any good. So I challenge you, find me a good functioning biblical family in Scripture. And I'm hoping there is one in there. I don't know all of this. Teach me. So then I get to the New Testament. I'm like, well, forget this. God is a dad. He's got a son. And he gets to pick who's going to raise that kid, right? He sent Jesus to earth to die for our sins. So he's going to go, who do I want to raise my son? He could have picked anybody on the planet. Who does he pick? Mary and Joseph. Seems like a good call. They were engaged to be married. Had the whole virgin birth thing going. God touched them. Wow, that's pretty solid. So I'm looking for, you know, how did they do the parenting thing? How did they do the parent? There's one story. It's found in Luke chapter 2. One story on parenting. Every year, Mary and Joseph would go to Jerusalem for the Passover festival, a party. And Jesus was 12, and they're like, here we go. We're going to the party like we do every year. It's an eight-day-long party, whatever it is, and off we go. And they get there, and they do the whole party thing, and it's time to go. I guess it was a really good party, so Mary and Joseph are walking home. And they walk for a day. And then Joseph goes, Mary, do you know where Jesus, is? And Mary's like, I thought you had him. No, I thought you had him. Where are you? They lost him. So they do what every good parent does, I guess, go back to the city looking for Jesus. And they found him 3 days later. You just lost Jesus for 3 days. And I mean, you might want to keep track of where you put the Son of God. So that's not the best story to go off of either. So it's a little bit difficult. So here's a little bit of a disclaimer. I've got four kids. They are now 3, 5, 8, and 10. If you want to know how to raise elementary school kids, you can come to my house and you can watch and see and hopefully learn a couple things. I have not raised a teenager yet, but I have been doing it for 20 years with families, and many of them have been living with me throughout those years. I get a little bit excited and riled up about it, so you'll have to forgive me on that. I want to go through five things really quick about coming alongside your kid. If you don't have kids, it's about how to influence people. One, kids spell love T-I-M-E. They spell love T-I-M-E. Make time, hang out with them. When they're little, wrestle, tickle, hug, giggle, play catch. Do whatever it takes. When they get older, hang out with them and talk when they want to talk, which is usually about 2 in the morning. Go to their bands, go to their shows, go to some stuff. Hang out with them. That's how they understand love. Now, there'll be some dads out there that'll say, look, I give them a house, I give them a room, a cell phone, a car, and even some food on occasion. That's how I show my love to kids. And you know what I would say to that? That's a great answer, and you're absolutely right, and that's true. But that's not reality in their brains. Reality to them, spend time with me. And it's not this quality time that we pretend that it's supposed to be. They want quantity, many, much, lots. You can't do 10 minutes of quality time with your kid in a week and make a difference. Quantity. Number 2, listen to understand, not to be understood. You need to invade their world. Talk with them, not to them. Pay now or pay later. School just started. They come home from school and you say, hey, how was school today? And they say, school sucks and all the teachers hate me. Whoa. All right. Well, there's a couple conversation killers. I call them conversation killers that you can say at that point. And dads usually say this. Well, if you get better grades and listen to what they say and do what you're supposed to do and sit where you're supposed to sit, then we wouldn't have this problem. Fix it. You can kiss that conversation goodbye. And then moms will also, they'll be a little more nice about it. Oh, baby, no one hates you. and school's not so bad. Kiss that conversation goodbye because you haven't addressed their needs, their felt needs. Hey, how was school? Oh, man, school sucks. All the teachers hate me. Why do you think all the teachers hate you? Well, now we have a conversation. Don't kill those conversations. Listen to understand. Talk with them, not to them. Pay it now or pay it later. The best example I can think of is something that happens at my house on a regular basis. Friday nights is oftentimes pancake dinner night at our house. We love pancakes. They're cheap. And when you have four kids, that's a good deal. So it's pancake night at Friday night at our house, and we're all sitting around the table and we're talking and stuff. And then Tiger, who's eight, says, "Hey, wouldn't it be great if pancakes could fly?" I'm a little worried at this point. And then Stone says, "Wouldn't it be great if we could sit on these giant pancakes and fly wherever we wanted to go?" And then Gunner says, "Wouldn't it be great if we could have two guns blazing and we're sitting on the pancakes and we could fly wherever we wanted to go?" And I'm sitting at the table going, "Really? This is our family conversation at the table?" That's what I'm thinking in my head. But no, what does Dad do? Dad grabs a pancake and he holds it and he says, "Guys, if we could sit on these flying pancakes with guns blazing and we could do hyper warp speed, where would you go?" Oh, now see, now they're all looking at me like, "Dad's in." He's in. He's on the pancakes. We're good to go. You can pay now or pay later. Some dads, I've seen it happen, put the pancakes down, sit up, don't spill the syrup, eat your dinner. Ooh. You're going to pay later for that one. Pay now or pay later. Because if I'm not listening in their life right now and I'm not talking pancake talk, then I will not be allowed to listen into their life later. Listen to understand, not be understood. I had a mom come in my office not too long ago. She said, "Greg, I've got a 16-year-old boy and things aren't going quite right and there's some little red flags going up." And I said, "When's the last time you actually talked with your son?" She's like, "Oh, no, no, we talk all the time." I was like, no, not like that. Like with your son. You actually listened, you know, to understand and with them. She goes, "No, for real, we talk all the time." And I'm like, "Look, I understand most parents say that. When is it?" And she was adamant. "No, we talk all the time." I said, "Okay, fine." So I called the kid and I took him to cookout. And he started sharing with me a lot of things that are going on in his life. And I said, "Hey, did you ever get a chance to talk to your mom about this stuff?" He says, "No." I was like, "When's the last time you and your mom like had a real like connection talk?" He said, "Well, there was one time we ended up at McDonald's and my mom took a phone call from her business and hung up the phone and she looked upset and I said what was wrong and she told me it was a tough day at work and I said, you know what, Mom, I have got some stuff in my life too. It's a little bit tough." And I said, "When was that?" And he said, "That was in the fifth grade." See, a lot of times, most of the times, as parents, we think we're communicating with our kid, but we're really just talking at them. When they're young, again, spend that time wrestling, hugging, playing, all that physical stuff. So one day, when they're teenagers, they actually want to hang out with you. Every little girl has an innate desire to be loved by their dad. Boys too, and moms, I get that. But my youngest is a girl, and I'm a dad, so we'll talk on that level. And I'll say this, if your daughter doesn't get that love at home from you, she'll get that from somebody else, somewhere else. And that's scary. When I was working in Washington, D.C., I did something that wasn't too bright. I was a youth pastor there. I was only 24, didn't know what I was doing. But I wanted to convey this point. So I got the 17-year-old star quarterback of the football team, letter jacket. I said, "Stand like this," and I got one of those 70s vans, you know what I'm talking about, with the little round window, and if you open up the back, there's shag carpet all inside and stuff. You've been in those. And I said, "Stand in front of the van just like this." Good-looking kid. Took a picture of it, made it into a poster, and on the bottom I had this tagline: "If you don't love your daughters, I will." That didn't go over so good at the church I was working at, but I wanted to make that point. I needed that point to be made because it's true. I've been around for the last 20 years, and I will tell you, it is very, very clear who got all the love and hugs and attention at home and who needs to get it outside the house. Dads, don't ever stop hugging your kids, especially those daughters. And I know they're not 6 or 7 or 8 years old anymore, and their bodies have changed. Don't freak out. Hug them anyway. They need it, and they want it. I've been here for a year, and if you know me at all, you've probably been hugged by me or my wife or my kids at some point in the last year. I run a very high touch ministry. I hug just about everybody. Last night we had Papa John's delivered pizza to our house, and when the doorbell rings, my 4 kids run to the door and they open the door and they invite everybody in and then they start hugging them. So this Papa John's guy, he's got pizzas in his hands and there's these kids that are just hugging him, and he was kind of this burly kind of guy. And I took the pizzas and he kind of hugged them back. He was a little freaked out. And Caroline's paying him, and Stone, my 5-year-old, is saying, "Dad, I'm hugging the Papa John's guy at my house after he delivered my dinner." Make sure you've got a positive high-touch ministry. I know. Number 3, rules without relationship oftentimes lead to rebellion. Kids thrive on boundaries. They do well when there's clear boundaries and consequences. Don't have any rules that don't have good reasons to it. I've taught my kids, and again, they're 3, 5, 8, and 10. I've taught them, when they come to me and they've got a question or something, and I'll say no, you know what their next sentence is to me? "Okay, Dad, but why? That's a great question." And I love that. And I'll get down on one knee and I'll explain it to them best I can. Sometimes they understand it and sometimes they don't. And then I just have to say, "Do you trust me?" And then they'll say, "We trust you, Dad." You could have the answer, "Because Dad said so." Is that true? Yeah. Is that even a good answer? Yeah. But it's not reality. And you'll start the division right off the bat. Encourage him to ask why. "Dad said so" just doesn't work. And the rules of the house. You got to have rules of the house. You got to have boundaries in your house. And you got to have clear consequences. And the rules of the house will change as they get older. It should change as they get older. The goal actually is when they're 17 to 18 years old, there are 0 rules for them in the house. That's the goal. And some of you are sitting here going, no. That's when the most rules are necessary. And then I would say to you, then you're parenting backwards. Because in 6 months, they're going to go to college. And there's going to be none. And I see Davidson College students sitting here this morning and at the next service, I'm sure. And you've seen it just like I've seen it. This freshman that had a bunch of rules when they were seniors in high school, and they go off to college and now there's no rules and they go crazy, absolutely crazy. The goal should be when they're 17, 18 years old, there's no rules, that we have trained them to make proper choices in their life. Because they're going to have to start doing it in about 6 months. Caroline and I have been married for 13 years. And of those 13 years, we've lived, just me, Caroline, and the family, our kids, for about 10. The rest of the time, we've always had somebody live with us. Generally, it's a freshman or sophomore in college that have gone through some tough times, and their families are a little bit of a mess. When we were in Ohio, I got a phone call from a young lady. Her name was Cassie. Cassie, we met in Iowa. Cassie had a baby when she was 16. Cassie's now 18 years old, and her mom and her dad and Cassie called and said, "We can't handle her anymore. Would you take her? Would you take her?" I was like, "What's going on?" "Well, she's a meth addict. She's strung out on cocaine. She's not listening to anything we're doing. Would you take her?" So I said, "Well, I'll call you back." I talked to Caroline, because at that point, Gunner was 3 and Tiger was 1. So now we're going to put a meth addict strung out on coke in our home with a 1- and 3-year-old. And Caroline's like, "Yeah, that's fine." She's crazy. Clear boundaries, some consequences. And I remember she moved in October, and she drove up to our house, and it was the middle of October, and doorbell rang. Tiger couldn't walk yet, but Gunner ran to the door, and we opened the door, and there was Cassie. Big, tall, black leather boots, tight black pants, tight black shirt, black fingernails, big black hair, pale makeup, black lipstick, black eyeliner, black eyeshadow. Bam. And Gunnar goes, "Is it Halloween?" Because it was October, we were trying to figure out what we want to be for Halloween. So we hugged her. "Welcome, come on in." Caroline and I later that night said, "Do you think she wears that all the time?" I was like, "Well, we'll find out tomorrow." Next day, sure enough, same stuff. And I pulled her aside, and she and I had our first conversation, and we went at it 30, 45 minutes. It's like, "What is up with your gear?" And she fought back, and we had a little bit of fight. And it was over, and I went back and talked to Caroline. She's like, "What are you doing? It doesn't matter what they're wearing. It's no big deal." And I said, "Yeah, I know that." And she said, "Why did you fight?" And I said, "Because I need Cassie to know that she can win battles here in our home, and I needed her to win that very first battle. Because next week I'm going to talk to her about her drug use and her lifestyle, and that's a battle I can't afford to lose." And I talk to teenagers all the time, and they are so frustrated because they never win any battles at home. None. And can I tell you something? When there's a war going on at home, and there's a kid that never wins any battles, you know what happens? They quit fighting. And they check out, and they go to their room, and now they're a sniper. And they will peg you from a distance. And now they're not talking with you, they're managing you. And that's not a healthy family. Tiger, he's 8 years old. A week before school started, we took him to Sport Clips to get his hair cut. I dropped him off. I went to Qdoba, came back. There's Tiger. 6-inch mohawk all the way around. And he said, "Dad, I wanted them to spray paint it black, but they didn't have any paint. Shave sides, just like mine." But bang, the thing was just sky high. And my first thought was, "Your mom's going to kill me." I was eating at Qdoba. He's getting a mohawk. My second thought, that is a battle that I will lose. Because later on in life, there's battles I can't afford to lose. Let them win some battles. And I'll say that applies to husbands and wives as well. If your spouse always loses battles and never wins any, they will check out. Pick your battles wisely. 4, encourage far more than you criticize. It's really easy to get into this mode of being critical, especially in the teen years. It's just bang, you were on them all the time about everything. Encourage at least 5 times more than you criticize. Because if all you do is criticize, you're building this us versus you mentality. And that's just not good. Find out what they're good at. Praise them for what they're good at. Reward them when you see them do stuff that's good. That'll go a long ways. Again, that's in the business world and leaders as well. 5, make sure your kids know that they are loved and they cannot get their own way. We're all born to rebel. Kids seem to do it better at that point. Parents, hold those boundaries and those consequences, and please don't give in on those consequences. If they break some house rule and you say, "Here's the consequence," you know what they're going to do? They're going to be on you to give up early. Don't give up. Stick to it. Because if you give up, then they've learned a very bad lesson. And on a side note, moms and dads, if you've got little kids and they're doing something they shouldn't be doing, and you say, "Johnny, stop doing that," and he does it again, and you start counting, I see this a lot. 1, 2, 3. I saw a family, they counted to 10. Here's what you're teaching that kid. I'm sorry. Here's what you're teaching. "Johnny, don't do that." He's looking at you going, "You know what? I've got 2 more shots at this before I get in trouble. I can defy my mom and dad 2 more times and it's still going to be okay because I don't have to stop until I'm at 3. I've even heard 2, 2.5, 2 3/4. We're getting really close. "Ah, man, don't do that." Don't do that. And when you have a consequence for a broken house rule, make sure that consequence is greater than the pleasure that they had when they screwed up and did that sin. Not too long ago, I had parents in my office with their kid. We're having problems with our kid. I was like, what's the latest one? Well, Friday they snuck out of the house. It was 1:30 in the morning. They didn't come back till 4:30 in the morning. We didn't know where they were, but we caught them when they came back in. It's like, oof, that's a big deal. You can't do that. What's the consequence? No cell phone for the weekend. And I said, and what else? No, that was it. I just looked them in the eyes and I said, hey, they're going to do that again next Saturday. Because they've done a cost analysis on this thing. It was far more fun to go out in the middle of the night for 3 hours with my friends than that. All I lost was my cell phone for a couple days. Man, don't do that. I know it's easier to give up. I know it's easier to let go, but stay strong. Don't quit. Parenting is strategic. Do you have a strategy? Leading people, influencing people is strategic. Do you have a strategy? I want to leave you with two really quick things. One, keep focused on the big picture. This is now I'm going to start meddling here in a little bit, and please don't throw anything. Make sure the first priority is G-O-D, not GPA or MVP. I've been doing this for 20 years. I have seen kid after kid with parent after parent emphasize grade point average and what is being done on the football field, in the soccer field, in the basketball court, in the swimming pool, in a dance class, and on the tennis courts far more than their relationship and character that they have with God. GPA is good. Sports are good. But you know what? They are temporary. Temporary. Moms, dads, you probably don't even remember your high school GPA. And if you had any trophies, they're not anywhere displayed in a house because it doesn't matter now, does it? Even now, they're temporary. Here's what's eternal. Ready? I've got four kids. I have four kids. I'm just being honest. I don't care if they complete school. I don't care if they go to college. I don't care what job they have. I don't care where they live or what house they live in. I don't care what kind of car they drive. I don't care what they decide to wear. I don't care about any of those things. I care that they follow Jesus Christ. The rest is gravy. Because I can live with this. I can. I cannot live with the thought or the fact that I will be in heaven with Jesus Christ and my kids will not. I don't care about their GPA and their MVP when it comes to following Jesus. Big picture. Understand the first priority. All I want in the end is for them to be with me because that's eternal. It's not temporary. Last thing, you can stack the deck in your favor and do all these things that I suggest, and you can still draw a joker. I'm just saying, that's true. You can be the best parents on the planet, and you can still have some prodigal son or some prodigal daughter. You could also be the worst parents on the planet, and they could turn out just fine. There's always exceptions to the rule. Don't bank on that exception, though. And why does that happen? Because we all have a choice, because we all make our own choices, and because we can make our own calls. Make our own calls. There's no perfect families here on earth. There's not one. I can't even find one in here. All I know is that God is making a perfect family that I am a part of. And we're in this series about making the call, and we're in this series about making choices. And can I tell you this? There's one choice that trumps all the other choices. There's one choice that matters for eternity. And that's the choice, what do you do with Jesus Christ? You can have the best GPA and the best job and the best everything on the planet. Who cares if you've lost your soul? Make that call first. Then all these other calls that we're talking about will make complete sense. You can try all this stuff, but if you don't have Jesus, figure it out. Make the call. I'm going to pray, If you want, you can join me down front or a couple other people down front if you have something you want to talk about. We're also in the prayer room in the back. God, thanks for our time. Thanks for the opportunity to come and to share. Thanks for this place that values healthy families, healthy marriages. God, we know it's going to be tough. You've told us there's going to be troubles. God, if there's anyone here whose marriage isn't quite right or family isn't quite right, would you put on their heart to make the call today to get some help? And we know that you are the source of all the help. You are the truth. You've got the answers. Help us run to you. Thanks again for making a perfect family one day. Thanks for letting me be a part of it. And thanks for sending your son that we would all have a chance to be in that family. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.